CliffCentral.com. Get you off my
mind. All right, little Shawn Mendes for you on Thursday morning. It's just after 7 o'clock, the 13th of February. It's not Friday the 13th, but it is the day of the State of the Nation address, which Cyril will be delivering in Parliament today. Canthan Pillay is going to join me in a minute for the Burning Platform. We're also joined by Mark Haywood. He's the editor of Maverick Citizen, a section of the Daily Maverick. He's also the former executive director of Section 27. That's where we've met a number of times, Mark, and has been a human rights activist for most of his life. We'll talk a little bit in a minute to Mark and to Canthan. But first, I want to go to Mandy Wiener, because she has written a column recently about the State of the Nation address today. And she's written this. She wrote, Cyril Ramaphosa is like the Flash, whose greatest strength is also his greatest weakness. Barry Allen is so fast that he can zoom through time streams, but he can also run so fast that he can be pulled permanently into the speed force energy field that gives him his powers, killing him. His speed can defeat him. Cyril Ramaphosa's greatest strength, his likability, is also his greatest weakness. Well, I don't know if she's even being too kind on that front, because I don't know that he has very many strengths at all. But who knows? We're going to have to, we'll have to speak to Mandy and figure that out. How are you, Canthan?
I'm awesome. How are you guys doing?
Good. How are you doing, Mark? Nice to see you.
Lovely.
Thank you very
much.
Yeah, good to have you both here. So we'll cross to Mandy in a second. She says, there seems to be a sense that the president is failing to show strong leadership. Oh? Really? That he's indecisive and that the country is adrift without clear direction? Oh? Really? He's taking too long to make tough decisions because he's consulting too widely. Oh? Really? At his Sona in June last year, Ramaphosa delivered a speech that was big on inspiration and visionary thinking. There was talk of bullet trains and smart cities. It overshadowed his more practical commitments to halve violent crime, finalize a land reform program, and create jobs. Let's just look at those three things, gentlemen, while we're getting Mandy on the line. Is she there, Sia? Okay, well, we'll get to her eventually. And let's look at those three things. So first of all, how did we do on the halving violent crime? I mean, we just had a guy who was killed with a brick in Kempton Park outside the police station just yesterday. The video is going around because this is what people do now. It's like a snuff film. Halving violent crime? No chance. Nowhere near, right?
I have no idea. I've just been keeping my head down in case someone throws a brick.
Then perhaps he did better on finalizing a land reform program.
No movement, really.
No. And if there was movement, it's movement that is threatening private property, which is not going to bring money into the country or boost the economy or do anything for poor people. Expropriation without compensation. That's gone really well. That's just done marvelous things to the South African economy. How about creating jobs? How have we done on that front?
Well, it's standing still, but standing still at a terrible level of unemployment.
29-something percent.
Well, it depends on who you ask, because remember they calculate this based on the number of people who are looking for employment.
Yeah.
So when people actually give up, you know, then theoretically it stands still.
Yeah, so these are not great figures for Cyril, are they? I mean, these are not the kinds of things that that any of us want to deal with. But here's
well,
Mandy.
One of the figures he should be dealing with is the fact that, you know, just in Gauteng schools alone, we've had 13 pupils killed since the start of this year.
Yeah, and we'll get to that in a second, because Panyaza Lesufi is using it as a reason to grandstand at every possible opportunity. But let's go to Mandy first. Mandy, how are you, first of all? I haven't spoken to you in ages. Are you well?
Morning, Gareth. Good day.
Good.
Thank you.
Yes, it's nice to talk to you. I liked your column. I just don't know if comparing Cyril to any superhero, even one like The Flash, is necessarily a good idea. He doesn't have any superpowers. Do you think he has any?
No. Look, at this stage, I think the point that I was trying to make is that we just need like an action figure. We just need somebody to do something. And I think that's the real frustration with Cyril at this point, is that, you know, he leads by consultation and by community and wants everyone to be happy and consulted and spoken to and feel like they're part of everything. We really just need a superhero to come in and make some decisions and do something.
Mandy, as I recall, you use a superhero as your Twitter bio picture.
Indeed, I do.
Just putting this out there.
Yeah, So let's just talk a little bit, because we saw Donald Trump's State of the Union speech last week, and you also draw parallels there. You say U.S. President Donald Trump, with all his severe flaws and failures, has played to his base by making tough decisions without caring what anyone thinks about him. Ramaphosa needs to be that person who can bring down the villains of state capture, of corruption, and of the economy. And Mandy, this is where you are really uniquely poised to give an opinion on how little has happened to the people who are behind state capture, how no one has gone to jail, how the public protector is a joke, and how the National Prosecuting Authority seems absolutely stillborn at every attempt to bring anyone to justice.
So look, I've spent a lot of time watching the NPA over the past year, writing about it. And there's lots of pros and cons here. Like, Shamila Batoy has walked into this position that is almost impossible to deal with. I think it was so much worse than what she anticipated. There's so much expectation on her. It really does lie on her to bring these villains to book. The problem that she's got is that there was no money and no resources, and everyone had left, and it's complicated commercial crimes. So what she's managed to do at least is get more money. And the wheels are slowly turning in terms of this investigating directorate that Hermione Cronier is running. We've started to see some movement around Trillion and the assets. You know, things are happening, but it's definitely too slow for the public. And I do have a degree of sympathy for Shamila Batoy here, because you don't want another Estina. You don't want to go to court and then withdraw charges, and then it's even more embarrassing. And this is an exercise in patience, but it's just not good enough for people. You know, so, they just really want to see people arrested.
Mandy, what is she doing, though? Is she busy rebuilding their capacity to prosecute effectively? Is she going through the various possibilities in terms of who she can charge and who she can start actions against, and just being very thorough? Or is she sitting on her hands because she's being prevailed upon by political influence?
No, look, I don't think we've reached that point yet where there's political influence. You know, I think that she is fiercely independent. You know, I think that we've seen this week there's been this aspirant prosecutors program that's been rolled out to try and entice people back to the public sector and get people working for the NPA and boost the numbers there. I think that you know, she's not sitting on her hands. Also, it's not up to her necessarily to make the decisions to prosecute. It's up to the directors of public prosecution. She doesn't make the actual decisions. I think she's just trying to get the wheels moving again. They were so stiff and stuffed that she needed to put grease on everything and get it moving. I think this year will be the year of prosecutions. We'll start seeing prosecutions happening, but we're not going to see convictions. That takes a long time.
Yeah.
And that's what people don't understand. And you know, all they need to do is get one big fish in the dock, and that will change public perception. You know, that will probably stem immigration to an extent. It'll change people's perceptions of the NPA. But, you know, it's just taking a hell of a long time.
Yeah, I suppose that for a lot of people, just seeing some practical application of the rule of law to these politicians who up to now have been inert would do a huge amount to restore confidence. Mandy, I saw a funny story yesterday, and I'd like all three of your comments on this. Ace Magashule's office in the Free State had a penny of painting on the wall, which was apparently worth a couple of million rand, and and the reason I bring
this, the driver's been arrested.
Yeah, the driver, his driver's been arrested, and when Ace was asked about this, he was I suppose confronted by a journalist, and he said, "No, I haven't heard a thing from the National Prosecuting Authority." Now, this is the kind of thing that shows that maybe the National Prosecuting Authority just doesn't have enough people working there, or enough good people working there, because this is a fairly stock standard case of theft, and it involves no doubt an instruction from Ace.
Why would he need to hear from the NPA? Because surely the follow-up would be with the police station where he purportedly reported this crime, right?
He didn't report the crime.
I
don't think Ace knows how to report a crime. Do you have any intel on this, Mandy?
Yeah, look, my understanding of that is that his version's a bit different to what the NPA's is, and that there has been quite a bit of investigation going on there. You know, this got a bit of media coverage. Apparently the NPA was looking at this. And you know what? This is the kind of case they need to look at as, you know, they need to try and Al Capone people.
Yes.
They can't go after this, like, convoluted stuff, follow the money, it'll take months, we're never going to get anyone back from Dubai. You know, they need to go for the things like a PNF painting, and that will convict someone.
Yeah,
and that's exactly the kind of cases that they've got to look at.
I agree, and this one is fairly obvious. There's already enough evidence. We have a missing painting. You know, the elements of the crime are fairly quick and easy to ascertain. And we know that Ace is not an art connoisseur, so he's not collecting these things for his own beautiful art collection at home.
No, by no means. I mean, yeah, look, that was hanging in his office, as far as I know. So, yeah, look, I mean, that's exactly the kind of stuff, you know. It's also where people have, like, papered over their own mistakes. That's where they're going to find the weaknesses. And that's exactly what the NPA and the Independent Directorate need to be looking at now.
All right, what would be the one thing that you would really like to hear from Cyril in the State of the Nation address tonight?
I think it would be something surprising, something that we wouldn't expect, something around some kind of action plan or cost cutting, something that makes us go, wow, and shows us that he's made a really big decision. You know, cause I think that's the problem here, is that he's not taking the difficult decisions, something that, you know, he doesn't need to consult on extensively.
I have a sense he's not taking any decisions, difficult or otherwise.
Yeah, no, I fully agree with that. You know, so I think that is what we need to do. You know, Gareth, I think that, you know, I would really like to see, you know, there's definitely some apathy from the country. You know, I think people are not going to be watching. I mean, I saw you saying that you're not even doing your drinking game this year.
Not a chance.
Which, like, I do take issue with, you know, because I think even if there's apathy, we still need people to watch, so that they understand what's going on, so that they can be active citizens and get involved and care. You know, so, like, I just hope that I don't want to hear inspirational, like, bullet trains and smart cities.
You see,
I want to hear on the ground stuff being done.
You raised the drinking game, and I've never spoken seriously about this, but when we started that in the early 2000s, the whole idea was young people didn't give a shit about the State of the Nation address. It was really just an opportunity for politicians to dress up and think that they were important for a day. And for the president, and at that stage I think it was Thabo Mbeki when we started the game, for the president to lay out his agenda, which was usually boring and things mostly ticked over, but people didn't care. And I did start the game with a hidden agenda, and the agenda was watch the damn speech because this affects you. Now, I'm starting to think that we're living in a world where government affects you less and less by the day, even if on the macroeconomic level they are affecting us. And most people are far too obsessed with what goes on in government, and particularly in leadership in the ANC, and that's not entirely healthy. All it's going to do is drive people away, drive people into their bolt holes, keep them clear of political discussion, because we know that political discussion is dangerous in South Africa right now. It's dangerous online. And I'm frankly just not that interested anymore. I know I'm probably I sound like I've given up, but on politicians I have given up. And I don't think there's anything Cyril can say tonight that would make me watch or pay attention. Nothing. Not a thing. Mark, do you want to jump in?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, the first thing I'd say is that I think that this is a critical State of the Nation address, despite all of our cynicism and skepticism and low expectations. You know, we are reaching a tipping point in this country. The pain that people are suffering on a day-to-day basis through unemployment, through a messed up education system, that can't go on. People won't tolerate it forever. Something is going to have to give. We're still in a situation where, you know, the Zoomers and the Carl Niehauses and all of that company are reveling in Cyril's failures, to be quite honest, his failures to move things forward. That's good for them. The slower, the more confused, the more anger, the better. They think that they can ride on that. So let's not forget that those people are not out of the picture yet. And so we have to, I think, find a way of how do we force this government and Cyril into action on critical things whilst remaining critical ourselves. But it would be far, far worse. I mean, you were joking about Ace Magashule and so on. You know, Ace is not out of the picture yet.
Not at all.
So there's a bigger danger that lies, In fact, it's not even a hidden danger. It's there. It shows itself every single day of the week. So it is a time where we can't afford to disengage, where we have to put, kind of put our skepticism and our cynicism beneath us and work out what can we as people do at this moment in time.
Well, I'm going to quote Leonard Nimoy as Spock in Star Trek VI, where he said, history is replete with turning points.
Mandy, I'm going to let you go. I know you've got a busy morning ahead of you, and good luck for tonight and covering the Sona and everything else. And we'll hopefully see you in studio soon.
Yeah, definitely. I'm looking forward to tonight. I think it's going to be interesting. I just want to see Cyril say something. That would be great.
Well, anything. At this point, if he just opens his mouth and talks, we'd be satisfied. Well, thank you. Mandy Wiener on the line. Best-selling author, among other things. If you haven't read any of Mandy Wiener's books, you probably don't read. All right, so, Canton, I mean, you glibly quote Leonard Nimoy. But the reality is, like, people build these things up to be meaningful, and very seldom are they. I want to contrast Donald Trump, who's much hated and loathed by a lot of people in this country, and Cyril Ramaphosa. All Donald Trump did in his State of the Union address the other day was tell people what had already been achieved by his administration.
Absolutely. There was no promises in terms of what was going to come.
3 years in.
Everything was about what was actually achieved.
The whole speech was about America on the up, about how the economy's on the up, their lives are improving, there is less trouble, less war, more international security, all kinds of stuff.
More carbon emissions, more...
Yeah, but who cares?
Actually, carbon emissions...
Who cares about that?
Carbon emissions in the U.S. are now at the lowest levels in 5 years. That's the... I've retweeted the link to that report this morning. It's absolutely credible.
No, so he... Let me finish my thought
on this. So let's leave Greta out of this for a while, though.
Yeah, let's leave Greta out. She is going to get a BBC TV series, apparently, so... All has been saved. The world is safe. She's got a BBC TV series, and she'll stop the glacier melting that way. Donald Trump goes up and he says, these are the things we've done, not these are the things we're going to do. And we sit here in South Africa and we have to listen to just absolutely made up bullshit about what might happen in someone's pipe dream, some utopian pipe dream from Cyril. That is, for me, the biggest the difference between what's going on in a country that works and a country that doesn't. Am I being unfair?
Yeah, I think you're being unfair. I mean, Gareth, I wouldn't hold Donald Trump up for anybody for any purpose, because a lot of what Donald Trump puts across in his State of Union speech is questionable, is based on lies. So he can't, for example, claim...
I saw the New York Times fact-checking him, and on almost everything... They had to admit he was actually telling the truth.
I've saw that New York Times report as well.
I haven't seen that New York Times report. But the New York Times
are no fans of Donald Trump.
No, I know they're not. But he can't, for example, claim to be the author of the economic growth in the USA. That has been some time in the making. Donald Trump can't claim that. This is
the Obama narrative. But
I don't speak for Obama,
I'd like us to swing back to Cyril, because really Cyril
is he's holding up a populist, a person who's extremely dangerous to the world at this moment in time.
So there's less conflict under him than any previous president. He's not droning the hell out of people in the Middle East like Obama was. No. Tell me how. How do you see that?
How do I see?
Yeah, on the numbers, on the facts, and he's talking largely about America. He wasn't talking about the international world. He wasn't giving an ideological view.
But inequality has never been greater. America has never been more fractured, more polarized.
That's not true.
Institutions.
Based on whom?
Where
do you get that from? From the New York Times.
I get it from things like the United Nations annual development report and so on. I mean, the facts are there, and the facts are clear.
The American middle class is growing.
Yeah,
that's not a debate, right? We can agree on that.
Okay.
Unemployment in minorities, Hispanic communities, African-American communities has never been lower. True or false?
I don't have it in front of me, Gareth, but I'll take your word for it now.
We can debate this, but it's coming directly from statistics that are being published in the United States. So where do you get the idea that this is a guy who's lying when Cyril, all he does is promise us things he's never going to deliver? Well, you see the contrast.
You know, I didn't expect to come here and to defend Cyril, to be honest with you, because I'm extremely critical of Cyril. But one thing I do appreciate of Cyril Ramaphosa is that the damage that was done by the 10 years of Jacob Zuma wasn't just at the level of the leadership of various institutions. It goes deep into the functionality of government, deep into government departments, and it takes time to begin to turn that around. And I would rather...
It's almost the ANC's culture.
Well, it is the ANC. I mean, I want, you know, I'm tired of the ANC. I want Cyril to stand up and say that he can't work with these inefficient, corrupt, dysfunctional ministers that he's appointed, that he wants to see these people who are implicated in corruption, even if they're his own comrades, booted out as quickly as possible, that he can't intervene in the NPA, but he will give the NPA the resources that they need, the money that they need to clean out the state. I want to see all of those things, but I also don't want to see him playing a populist, building a populist narrative. I mean, you complain that he's making promises that he can't keep, but he could make many more promises that he can't keep. He could stand up there and make claims. I don't want him to do that. I want him to reckon with the nation and call all people together and say, people, how are we going to fix this problem as a nation, rather than you all looking up at me and thinking that I'm going to be
able
actually, to do this?
Well, actually, he could have done it from day one. He could have said, day one, we've got a policy to end cadre deployment. He could have said, day one, we're going to let SAA shut down. He could have said, day one, we're going to break up ESCOM into generation, transmission,
and distribution.
Day one, he could have said, we're going to dump the NHI. Day one, he could. Every single one of those things would have immediately caused an uptick in both national confidence, an uptick in the value of the rand. These are easy things to do. All he has to do is to commit to those things. He's unable to do so because whenever he tries to say, even his entire cabinet is tearing itself apart. You have Guede saying, let's shut down SAA. And then you have, which was totally surprising to me, by the way, that Guede turned around and said that. But I trace that back to the fact that the narrative that Tito Mboweni started carving out last year, which is to say that we are essentially subsidizing rich people, has actually resonated with a significant chunk of the populace. But, Mark, you know, going back to my point...
I promise you don't have to... You didn't bring here to defend Cyril.
That's why I said finding myself in an interesting position.
Or Donald Trump, for that matter. But right. let's park Trump. But my point is that Cyril was sitting at Jacob Zuma's side for 5 years... And he's fully aware of all of the steps that were put in place. So he knows what's actually necessary in terms of unraveling it. But those simple things that I've been outlining, those are not difficult.
No, everybody's talking about these things like they're hard decisions.
They're not.
I disagree that they, you know, that it's just a simple question, dump SAA, dump NHI. You know, there's complex economic, social things that underlie each of these. I'm not a supporter of NHI. You know, I've worked in health for many, many years, but I understand what the idea of national health insurance is trying to do. I would like them to say, I'd like Cyril to say, listen, we're putting this aside for a period of time and we're going to fix the public healthcare system and we're going to regulate and make much more efficient and much more affordable the private healthcare system. I'd like to see things like that being done. Yeah, but you know,
where has that successfully been done anywhere in the world? Fixing the public healthcare system and making it
so that is not honest. Norway, Sweden, please just stop. Canada, we can look at it. And there's this notion that they're going broke in all those countries. Be intellectually honest. It's not. Trudeau.
I will give you a very specific example of where it does work in terms of public healthcare. Israel has a brilliant business model. Okay. It's, so everyone, there's a safety net for everyone in the entire population. But basically the whole idea is that it's farmed out to the private sector. They have key performance objectives that they actually need to be reaching. Mm-hmm. But essentially the state picks up the tab for every single one. As an individual, you get to choose which of those providers you get to go with. And they all require to provide minimum levels of service. So I'm saying it is, Mark, I actually agree with you. I think that I think that we actually do need a health safety net. And particularly as we go forward in terms of how economy is developing around the world, we're increasingly going to be seeing the gig economy being the rule of law. So the idea that we're going to be having healthcare that's actually going to be subsidized by individual employers is going to go away. So
and it's probably worth pointing out that the gig economy coming along and with people doing whatever work they can find in a country like South Africa, that unions are completely a waste of time. There is no space for them in the future. There's nowhere for unions to exist. There isn't.
Gareth.
I mean, how do you...
You know, we're living in a country that's a democracy that has freedom of association, freedom of expression, freedom
of all of that.
It's not... people are being terribly exploited in many forms of employment.
In this country now?
I'm also, again, you're putting me in a... Are people being exploited?
Right now, in this country.
You think people are not being exploited in this country as farm workers, as domestic workers?
I think that most of those people aren't. And I also think that if there is any problem in employment, it's likely to be happening where there is exploitation with foreign workers.
Well, that is happening as well.
Who will do whatever they can. And those people aren't in unions.
You know,
and those people
you say there's no exploitation, and you're probably going to dispute this as well. But we're the most unequal country in the world. The wealth, the evident wealth of rich people in this country versus the grinding, horrible poverty of poor people, the levels of unemployment, those people who manage to scrabble to get a job, what is happening to those people, the hours that they're having to work, the casualization. You know, I remember speaking 6 months ago, I was shopping in Game or somewhere, speaking to one of the women workers at the tills there and hearing what her life is, how she has to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, what she gets paid, how much of what she gets paid she loses through her transport costs, her vulnerability, etc., etc.
These are all you're making very good points. Now, let me tell you how we actually address
just before you interrupt me, we're not going to build a socially cohesive South Africa if we deny the pain and suffering that a lot of people still experience. And if we deny...
I'm saying the way in which we fix that pain and suffering is by actually fixing the things that are currently broken.
But you just said fix it with the private healthcare sector. That's a whole nother story.
I'm saying that it actually works.
It doesn't work. Have you read the Health Market Inquiry report into the private healthcare sector?
Read reports all the time.
But have you read that report?
And yet I see bumblebees.
Are you happy with what you're paying for private healthcare?
I'm not happy with what I'm paying for private healthcare.
Do you think
it's a return
for the money that
I do get? I do get return for the money that I pay into it, because my child was born 10 weeks premature. Hospitalization fees for that ended up being over 300,000 rand. Got picked up by my private healthcare. My child would have been dead if she had been with public healthcare. Very simple. So that's my business model. But if you look in terms of the story of the woman who works at Game, very effective way of actually addressing the core problem that she's got, that the bulk of the money that she is spending actually goes on public transport. How do you fix that? You actually fix it by putting money into things like rapid transit, as opposed to putting it into South African Airways.
And as opposed to a taxi recapitalization program, which is essentially just taking public money and giving it to private taxi owners.
Consistently. So
all the time.
Look,
fixing Metro Rail would have been the starting point. If you look in terms of the way in which people are crammed into those trains, that all of the money that currently goes towards SAA, shut down SAA. It's there for rich people.
I don't think, you know, I don't buy this thing that it's just there for rich people. And I think when you make an argument like that, you're part of a group of people who have their greedy eyes on SAA and think, okay, if this whole thing can be privatized, we're going to make lots of money from it. We can run it better, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, that's undoubted. Publicly run airways are a thing of the past. There are almost no successful examples of that anywhere in the world. And Eskom is a great example of just how badly the state runs everything in this country. I mean, you can't argue about that.
I think you're being glib, to be honest with you.
Well, give me some shining light through this glibness. I'd be only too happy to hear it.
Well, what I would like to see is a Cyril keeps on talking about a social contract, a common commitment within South Africa to identify, as we've talked about, all the critical areas of economy and society which at the moment are broken or breaking down and which need to be fixed. I want to get us beyond an ad hocism where we deal with today's crisis, which is Eskom. Meanwhile, we know that a similar crisis is developing in relation to access to water, in relation to sewage, etc., etc. So we're going to spend the next 20 years dealing selectively with one crisis after another crisis rather than looking at everything together and saying, how do we fix all of those things together? But I don't want us to go and pretend that there are easy solutions to these things, because I don't think that there are easy solutions to these things. And I think that we mislead the public if we suggest that there is.
That's all fair and well. A lot of it is fairly general too. Mm. But I'm interested. I want to go back to your point on inequality, because it doesn't sound like you're really interested in inequality. It sounds to me like you're interested in rich people. Like you have this idea that the point of life is for everyone to be equal. And I'm interested in
why
that
do you say I'm interested in rich people?
No, because it seems to me like there's this fascination with the top 2% of society who it seems are you know, these are essentially the people to demonize. These are probably the people who are creating all the employment. These are probably the people who are inventing all the devices. These are probably the people who are making it possible for people like Canton to have private health care. What are you going to do once you've taken all their money away?
Did I suggest that we take all of their money away?
Well, in inequality terms, that's probably the only viable outcome.
I'm not interested in rich people. I'm interested in the rights to equality and opportunity of poor people in this country. And that is the premise on which our democratic South Africa is founded. It's premised on social justice, on people having access to healthcare, people having access to quality education, etc., etc.
You can't do that if there's no money.
But these people who are sitting with vast piles of money.
Who are these people? There aren't any left in South Africa.
It's nonsense to say that there's none left in South Africa. Just take a drive round the rich suburbs
Mark,
of Johannesburg.
Sounds like you're talking about our pension fund.
Huh?
Don't shift. Okay. So there's
no rich people left in South Africa.
These tremendously rich people who have all. Don't you think that the richest ones have already gone and the money is already out? Why do you think we're running at a deficit and SARS can't collect tax?
Well, SARS can't collect tax because our domestic market is constantly shrinking, because the number of employed people is constantly shrinking. That's the problem. In fact,
if someone really had money,
we're not overtaxing the riches. We've never introduced a wealth tax.
Do you think 40-odd% isn't too much?
Well, by international standards, it's on the par with
other
countries.
It's okay for the state to take 40. If I must work.
They take 40% of my money. They take 40% of your money. I don't have a problem with
5 months of the year, roughly, just to pay for other people.
No, but to look at it like that is
isn't that. But isn't
we're
that
all involved in a social contract. If you want to go back to the 19th century, where rich people are given complete freedom to get richer, to exploit.
When did that ever happen?
Well, we're not that far away from
it. But Gareth, you are ignoring a great question. Maybe some people don't know what the social contract is, and I presume you're referring to Rousseau's notion of the
social contract. Well, I'm referring to the historical thing of a social contract, but I believe our constitution. The basis in which we avoided a civil war in the early 1990s and 1994 was to make into our supreme law a document that talked about equality and that talked about social justice and that talked about reparation for 300 years where black people were exploited by white people, where black people did the labor that created most of the wealth in this country and it was taken to a minority. And that hasn't changed fundamentally. 80% of the wealth in this country is controlled by 20% of people. Read the reports of Dennis Davis and his tax commission.
Anywhere in the world, it's called the Pareto principle. This is an observable function of the universe. It's got nothing to do with cruel capitalists at the top of the pyramid. I mean, this is it's science.
What science? That's just the natural order of things. Your natural order.
Let's use China as a very specific example of that. Because there are more dollar billionaires in China than anywhere else in the world.
So China, which I know a little bit about.
Huge inequality.
There's huge inequality. But China is an authoritarian dictatorship where there is no democratic right of expression, where the Communist Party, which used to be a so-called communist or socialist party, has used its monopoly and consolidation of power to distribute, create resources and opportunity for a small number of people, and has created these dollar billions and billionaires. But is that a model? Is that, you know...
Well, a free market's a better model than that. I don't think we can disagree.
I'm not against the free market, but I'm against a free market that is sensibly and reasonably regulated to try to...
By government?
Yeah.
Okay.
But who else would regulate it?
This government of ours, which can't run a piss up in a brewery, this government should be allowed to regulate what little bit of sensibility there is in the free market.
Gosh.
I mean, really, that's what you're asking
but guys,
for.
We've got Cyril pitching up. I don't want to turn this into a let's gang up on Mark kind of thing.
That's okay. I don't mind being ganged up on.
No. But I think we should be going back to talking about the sauna.
All right, go on.
And, well, for example, here's a couple of predictions, all right? If we look in terms of the threat by the EFF to actually disrupt the sauna,
yeah.
I think that's going to be a bit of a damn squib.
Yeah.
And the reason why I think it's a damn squib is that if they actually try to do their disrupting, the speaker's going to call for SAPs who have been deployed out there to escort the EFF members from the premises. And they can toy to outside as much as they want to, but they're certainly not going to have the masses flocking there to toy toy on their behalf.
Well, so they've played that card. It's done. Don't you agree, Mark?
Mm-hmm. I do agree.
So I think that that's pretty much going to go away. One of the things that I find interesting was if you've been following Tito's Twitter feed, you'll see that he went down to Cape Town yesterday and he tweeted pictures of himself and cabinet colleagues, including the president, prepping for the State of the Nation address. So effectively, what that's giving us is some insight into who the people are that are actually shaping this address that's going to be popping up today. And clearly, it's not the Ace Magashulas of this world. Mm. So at that level,
you may be hopeful.
No, not hopeful. You know, I think hope is too strong a word. But is it possible that battle lines are actually being drawn? And I think that that's the best that we can hope for. That Cyril actually says the time has come to take people that are actually on side with me, pull them into my inner circle, and make a stand that says that I'm in charge, at least insofar as what I'm going to say tonight is representative of what my plans are. Well, yeah, that's the best that I can come up with at this point. Am I expecting anything dramatic in terms of policy type stuff? I don't know. You know, but Tito certainly doesn't seem to be downcast.
Bulelo, what would you want? I mean, you know, if any one thing had to come out of the sauna tonight that would make you make your heart skip a beat, what would it be?
Well, Gareth, I've probably told you in private, but I've always said I believe democracy is over. We just haven't accepted it as a world. What I would like to see is people putting more heat and people taking responsibility, our leaders. And as a young black man, I have to speak in a context. Is there is a time for me to stop looking at people like Cyril and people who, and I know we've spoken about this, liberated, and I'm putting that in inverted commas, and gave black people an opportunity in this country, and stop saying it was good enough then, so it's good enough now. That was a different thing. Now you need to deliver because I can see the guys in Singapore. So now I know what governance should look like on an international level. So it's no longer good to give me these empty, like we've been speaking about. It's no longer good. It's time to deliver because people are genuinely hungry in this country. They're not just a number on your page. So I want to hear the end of that. And you cannot be a billionaire standing up there and parading yourself as a champion of the people. And people are hungry in this country and you continue to deliver this. So it's my time and people in my position to say that it's over to be incompetent. Now we deliver on an international standard.
Well, as Canton said, I think the practical solution to the incompetence is to stop CADA deployment. But that's not going to go anywhere because the whole ANC idea is let's just create jobs for our pals, put people in positions, let them earn salaries. It doesn't matter what happens to the state.
Your comrade card does not matter anymore, I'm afraid. It is over now. We're doing the politic of the day.
It does matter to them.
That's what. Well, this is what I'm saying.
Those
I'd
people
like to...
could never find jobs in the private sector. They're not competent people.
And I'm afraid if you want to play in government, it's over now. We need to deliver because people, as you've said, are poor, and that takes competence. Government doesn't just run itself. You need competent people, and we need So I'd like to see less of this what they call filibustering.
But you see, but again, that raises another question. So what is Cyril going to say about our basic education system? Because you can say we need competent people, but we're not actually producing competent people. We're producing people who are illiterate, unemployable. So if there's a starting point, one of the starting points has to be to say, okay, we're going to marshal resources, we're going to marshal ideas, we're going to monitor, we're going to ensure efficiency, accountability, we're going to make sure that by the time a kid goes out of grade 12, we're not just telling lies that, oh, the matric thing has gone up. We're actually producing people who are capable of running a state, capable of working in a private company, et cetera, et cetera. If we don't do that, then even if we get to the end of CADA deployment, we're still going to find that we don't have people with the skills that we need to run a modern 21st century state. So there's very concrete
things. We can import them from Zimbabwe.
Well, the Zimbabwe education system isn't what it used to be either.
It's still significantly better than ours.
It's interesting that you both indicated this issue of competence in various ways. I spoke to Herman Mashaba earlier this week, and that interview's out tomorrow. And for all the things that people do and don't like about Herman Mashaba, he said that he believes the ANC has deliberately stultified people's education in order to keep them in thrall of the state.
Many people have been saying that for the past couple of decades, yes.
And we are sitting with a situation which is unsustainable, where, again, these poor people whom Bulelo and Mark have referred to, there are 17 million of them. That's more than the number of people who are employed in this country who are living on social grants. Mm. That money is going to run out. We do not have an endless supply of it.
The most significant thing that happened this week, Anglo Gold.
Yes. Well, let's talk about that.
Yeah. AngloGold has basically sold off all of its South African interests to Harmony. They've basically...
Harmony got a good deal.
Well, yeah. $4.4 billion. I don't know whether it's a good deal. I doubt they're going to make that money back from those mines.
You don't think so, just because mining has become so expensive?
It's become so expensive. And
margins are so tight.
The margins are so absolutely tight. And, you know, the rand would have to tank even further substantially in order to do that. But again, law of diminishing returns kicks in at that level. Because remember, whenever the rand actually tanks, it's the poor people who actually pay the brunt of this in terms of the ongoing effect, in terms of paying higher prices for fuel. So the trade-off in terms of increased revenue from the gold mines is not actually enough to offset the daily cost of needing to actually find fuel to keep the country moving and fed as a whole. Mm. So the mines, you know, certainly as the source of wealth that the likes of the EFF are hoping, it's just not there anymore.
Yeah, but again, that's why, again, if you talk about economic policy, I mean, we're in a deep economic rut. But the answers to the economic crisis are not just relying on old industries, old South African industries. It's about where is there a space for South Africa to lead in new economy and new industry. It's not in the mines. The mines will continue to be important, but that's the past.
Old, yeah. Well, I'm curious also then to bring in this issue because Kasatu have opened their fat mouths and said, and they are fat. You'll see them on the red carpet tonight. You'll see some of the Kasatu people marching out there in all their finery, which always to me is the most just egregious, outrageous display of how they say one thing and do another. But Kasatu have said they're expecting Cyril Ramaphosa to frankly acknowledge the crisis the country is in when he delivers his SONA. And they're also expecting pensions to be appropriated so that we can sort out Eskom. Now, is anyone here in favor of that? Does anyone here think that might be a good idea?
I think that what was kind of interesting is that we initially had COSATU's spokespeople saying that they thought it was a good idea. And then suddenly you had the Secretary General saying, well, actually, hang on. Let's hold off on this. I think that if workers are actually told your pension money, which is actually meant to keep you secure, when you eventually end up retiring, is going to be thrown down a sinkhole, and you're never going to be able to get the same return on investment on it as if, for example, that money was invested in NASPAF shares. I think the workers are going to turn around. You know, again, there's this entire idea that people in this country don't have agency. And the political elite insists on actually trying to make decisions in terms of how poor people they need to be spending their money. Yes. Mm-hmm. And the fact of the matter is that poor people know how to spend their money better than anyone else does. You know, frankly, for things like schooling, like healthcare and so forth, if you actually take all of the money that currently gets spent on bloated government departments, give it directly into the hands of people, just distribute it to them directly. You know, it works out to, what, 25,000 per child per year that we are currently spending in the education department. Give that to the parent for the child. We have private schools that are being set up in the townships that are running at around about 1,000 rand a month, and they are providing a significantly better quality of education simply because teachers have gotten together and they've set up these schools and they're actually working. This entire idea of taking the workers' pension funds, it's totally abhorrent. Well, those workers don't have the ability to take that money out of the country. Look, if you had taken the entire investment of the PIC, and at the start of Zuma's term, you had just taken that money and converted it to US dollars and stuck it in a bank, no further investment, that money would have doubled by now.
Instead, with the PIC, what's happened is we've lost money.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Public Investment Corporation. There is something, I mean, the display that goes on tonight. I want to hear what you both think of that, because it irritates me.
It irritates me, too.
I see these, you know, our media, sycophantic as ever, go there and they report on it like it's a fashion show. They talk about what someone like Thandi Modise is wearing. And frankly, it wouldn't matter to me what she was wearing if she just made some contribution in some small way. Balekambete, people like that who've pitched up year after year. She's now no longer in parliament. But there are people who just, this is their big day. It's their day almost to thumb their noses at everyone else. What do you think of this?
Remember that the State of the Nation used to actually be held in the morning. And it was Jacob Zuma who then moved it to the evening because he wanted a larger television audience. Mm-hmm. I strongly suspect that people are unlikely to tune in on television to watch the State of the Nation address this evening. But I think it's a good idea to turn it into a televised event and actually shut down the pomp and splendor that goes in Parliament. So let's put the president before a TV camera, where he actually delivers the State of the Nation address, and then Parliament the following day can actually end up debating it. But this entire idea of people dressing up and shutting down the city of Cape Town and spending the absurd amount of money that's required to put in place protection and crowd control and all of that kind of stuff, it's a waste.
Mm.
Yes, we do need to hear what the president says, but you know, this is 2020, as you keep telling us, Gareth, and there are more efficient ways of actually doing the same thing.
There's a
Mark, by the way, is smiling. Either in support. Or
no, I agree with you on this. I mean, I think it's sickening to see.
Mark,
it.
We actually,
but it's not just the money that
you
gets
and I
spent.
Actually have more in common than you can imagine. Well, it's just the way in which we get there that we disagree on.
No, but it's not just the pomp and ceremony of this evening. It's the level of waste,
absolutely,
and overpayment of some of these people, the amount of money that we pay on Cyril's blue lights, you know, whenever you see the convoy of 10 or 15 cars escorting Cyril or escorting the deputy president or whatever, you know, there's few countries in the world. I saw a picture the other day of Cyril when he was at the AU in Ethiopia, that he was picked up by the prime minister of Ethiopia in his own car, who then drove Cyril from the airport to the meeting.
Well, that must have made Cyril think back to 40 years ago today. 30 years ago today, Nelson Mandela was released from prison, and Cyril had to use his own car.
But we just don't need this.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you completely. And, you know, Mark, there's this funny thing that goes, you mentioned the deputy president. I mean, my God, if ever there was a useless, pointless role in the world, it's that man's job. Who alone knows?
Or it's that man in this instance. Well, it may not be the job, because it's a big job. And if you had a good, efficient, honest, incorruptible person there who was told, take this, take this, take this, and see to it and report to me. But
like
when you've got
Searle, when he was deputy president, I mean, I don't know that that role's even necessary. And half of these cabinet posts, a minister of women, children, and the disabled, certain things that just, to me, smack of things that are trying to paper over the cracks.
But well, that's certainly during the Mandela era. You know, Mbeki was certainly not a useless deputy president.
No, because he was the head of government.
Yeah, you effectively had a separation of roles, and you had Mandela as being the statesman, and Mbeki effectively giving effect to government policy. The problem that we've had subsequent to that is, of course, that Mbeki completely distrusted his deputy, who was Jacob Zuma, and we've had that pattern that has then followed.
What do you think of what Carl Niehaus said yesterday? He gathered, I'm sure you've seen the clip, right?
Carl's one of those people who should be in orange overalls.
Carl Niehaus yesterday said something like, us black people.
Now listen to this. He's sitting with a bunch of the ANC Women's League leaders, and this is what's going on. If this isn't the most patronizing, ugly thing you hear today, I'll be surprised.
It's us. Say it loud for us.
I'm Msholozi.
And we are Msholozi.
Msholozi is us.
Msholozi is us.
Msholozi is us.
And we are Msholozi.
And we are Msholozi.
Now, that is, in so many ways, the ugliest thing.
How the cult of personality.
But cult, right?
Yeah.
It sounds like a cult, but here you've got a guy. I mean, this is just unbelievable. He's making them say, like school children, repeat after me. What mental illness do you think Carl Niehaus has?
a litany of mental.
Oh, man. I just saw that and I could not believe what I was hearing. And these women in the ANC Women's League are just parroting after him like we're living in... I mean, this is like socialist Russia in 1935.
Four legs good, two legs bad.
Yeah.
You know, all
unbelievable.
And we live in South Africa. There has to be a level of awareness what the aesthetics are for a white man to be doing that around.
Yeah.
You know, we play in the field of...
Maybe that's why it bothers me.
There's a lot going on there, and all it tells you is that is lack of awareness. Because in the South African context, you think how gross that looks. Mm. Ugh.
All right, so come on. Let's hear what you'd really like Searle to say. I asked Mbulelo that question. He gave a very good answer. Is there any one thing you've already said, Canton, you'd like him to just draw the battle lines, if nothing else?
I think that's the best we can hope for. The things that I'd like him to say, I doubt he'll say. I doubt he's going to shut down NHI. I doubt he's going to actually proceed with the shutting down of SAA. All of the, you know, the basic stuff that can be implemented readily, I doubt he's going to go down that route.
Anything else you want to see or hear?
Well, I've talked about education. I think education is central to everything. And again, not just to mouth concern about education, but to come up with real plans, not targets in terms of years, but targets in terms of months. How are we going to get resources into our schools? How are we going to get rid of the pit toilets? A whole bunch of things like that. I think he needs to do something that people can see quickly, that can begin to restore hope to a lot of people, but which will make a difference to our country and to our economy as well.
All right. Well, thank you, gentlemen.
For getting rid of the pit toilets, by the way, I put together a plan to do that in less than R1 billion. Extremely easy to implement. It actually just requires that they get off their ass.
Well, that's the thing. There's been pit toilets we talked about for the last 3 years, but we still have pit toilets. You see, that's...
Yeah. Well, I thank you both for your time, and you, Mbulelo, and we will see you tomorrow. 6 a.m. bright and early. This is The Burning Platform. It's brought to you by Nando's. You want to talk some more to us, send us a message. If you've got some ideas for what you want discussed next week, you can do that too. Gareth@cliffcentral.com. Thanks for joining us. We will see you tomorrow.
Cliffcentral.com.